Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Jasmine Regia, together with my co-host, Greta Anderson. Hi, Greta.
Hi, Jasmine, and hello to you, the listener.
Today, I will interview Kristen Farrell from The Language Project, an after-school program that teaches Spanish to kids ranging from elementary to high school. The Language Project started in 2011 and has programs in three states and internationally.
The Language Project has now started lessons at Ames Christian School and works with elementary students all around Ames. After that, I recap Wednesday's visit of Ed Fallon to Ames. Last year, Ed and his cohorts completed a cross-country walk from Los Angeles to the East Coast to start conversations about the topic of climate change with people along the way. This year, he's on the march again, walking the route of the proposed pipeline through Iowa that would take crude oil from North Dakota to Illinois. We hear him speak, then speak live by phone to Wally Taylor, legal counsel of Iowa's Sierra Club, a key member of the opposition to the pipeline coalition.
And at the end of the show, Vivica Dillard, a KHOI volunteer and producer of The Hotspot on KHOI, will be talking about March Madness. In Iowa, there are, of course, high schools who have Spanish courses, and there's also online opportunities for high school students to take advantage of, and that is Iowa Learning Online, which is an online service for students who want to expand their learning in various areas, including online courses in Spanish, as well as French, German, Latin, and Chinese. However, in Iowa elementary schools, there are three school districts and seven separate schools in Iowa that offer language courses. Students from kindergarten to fifth grade can learn Spanish or Chinese, depending on the school district. Each school has a different curriculum on which they immerse students into learning different languages. A school may teach one class, let's say, math and English, and then the next class, geography and Spanish, where the languages are alternated throughout the school day. And other schools teach an entire day in one language and alternate languages throughout the week. Some schools are in West Liberty, Des Moines, West Des Moines, Pella, Mount Vernon, Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, Sioux City, and they all teach Spanish or Spanish and English. And few schools in Wellman, Kelowna, and Washington Township districts and schools teach Chinese and Spanish, while Bondurant teaches Chinese. You can find more details about these schools at research.education.uiowa.edu. Dual language programs, 50-50 programs, and after-school language programs are spreading throughout Iowa. A dual language program is when you immerse students into both languages, and then 50-50 programs is when you immerse half and half languages throughout the day and throughout the course. Most schools right now are in process of expanding 1 year after each grade level until it is complete. So starting with kindergarten class and following that same class until middle and high school.
One Spanish teaching program that has reached Iowa is the Language Project, which started in Kansas City and Lincoln, Nebraska, simultaneously in 2011. Sarah Greenwood is the founder and CEO of the Language Project, and here to speak with KHOI is the Vice President and Chief Operations Officer, COO, of the Language Project, Kristen Farrell. Kristen Farrell grew up in Urbandale, near Des Moines. She attended Northwestern College in Nebraska, where she graduated with a degree in education. Welcome, Kristen.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we also have here in the studio an Iowa State student who teaches Spanish to a, level course?
It's third grade to sixth grade.
Yep, and he teaches that at Ames Christian School. He is here to share his experience with the program and why he joined in just a little bit. Welcome, Mike.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Well, the Language Project is here in Ames, starting at Ames Christian School, teaching students Spanish. So, Kristen, could you tell us about what the Language Project does here in Ames?
Yes. So, the Language Project in Ames is currently operating as an after-school club for Ames Christian students. So, what we do with after-school clubs is we go into the school following the school day for 1 hour a week. And we do a full leveled curriculum that basically it builds on itself. So they learn the foundations of Spanish, and it continues to build so that the goal is that those students become bilingual Spanish speakers by the time that they're moving on from elementary school. So that's, you know, that's what we're doing at Ames right now. And on top of that, they also have take-home learning materials to kind of reinforce what they're learning at home.
Okay, great. Well, I just want to start with a little bit of history of the Language Project, how it all started.
Okay, so the Language Project a few years ago, and actually a number of years ago, I would say that it started in Spain. So Sarah, my business partner, her and I, we went to college together, and she studied abroad and just fell in love with the culture and the people. But she came back here and worked in Nebraska for a year and just really missed it. And so she moved back. And while she was over there, she was teaching English in daycares and elementary schools and just really felt like we needed a program like this in the United States, that we were really lacking in this sort of instruction, and began to look into developing a program and what that would look like here for American students. She contacted me, and we talked a little bit about it. At the time, I was a daycare director in Liberty, Missouri, and, you know, I was blown away by it. You know, I couldn't wrap my mind around it because we just don't have things like this in the United States, and definitely not in the Midwest. And so as she began to develop the program, we decided to launch it and give it a go at the daycare that I was currently working at. And so we launched it at two separate schools, one in Lincoln and then my daycare in Liberty. And I loved it. I loved watching the classes and just was sold from basically the very beginning, just that, you know, this is something different. This is something that we need and something unique. So I quit my full-time job and joined forces with her shortly thereafter, and now we are operating in five states and hopefully soon to be six and seven. And so that really is the main history of the Language Project and just really how we started. It was just answering what we saw was a problem. The problem is that in the United States, we start language learning too late. We actually do it backwards. Starting in high school is not the perfect time. There's a window of opportunity for language learning, and it happens in early childhood and the young kind of formative years. That's when they take in language at the best time, because if you think about it, that's when they're learning a language already. They're learning their native tongue, and so why not parallel it? And so that's the problem that we see, and that's the problem that we hope to solve, is to offer these after-school clubs and affordable in-school language learning programs that schools could actually, you know, bring the program in as a part of their day and as a part of their curriculum.
And do you all start with the same grade level when you teach Spanish to these children?
We don't start with the same grade level, and Michael can attest to that. At Ames Christian, we have children of all grade levels in our program there, and what we try to explain is that these children are all on the same level for language learning. Most of them only know maybe what, you know, Dora has taught them, which is just some vocabulary, basic vocabulary, maybe colors and numbers. And so they're kind of all on the same level. There is opportunity when we start as a in a school day that we would maybe, you know, you had talked about that they ease it in, as in starting with one kindergarten class, and then, you know, they're going to move forward and do the next kindergarten class as they add the language into their school day. But we start with all ages, and they start on level one, and they work their way through the program because what we know about language learning is that those students are all on the same level, and whereas a kindergartner may actually be taking the language in at a faster rate than a fifth grader because their brain is at a different place. That linguistic part of your brain takes in information slower and slower the older that we get. If you've ever tried to learn a language as an adult, you're shaking your head right now, because it is very difficult to learn a second language as an adult. Not impossible, but it's easier the younger that you are. And so we don't say that kindergartners are starting here and fifth graders are starting here. What we say is that they're all starting at day one, level one.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely true. Last night I was looking up videos on like dual language programs, and it was a kindergarten class, and it was just amazing to me being a native Spanish speaker, seeing these children just fluently speak Spanish. I was like, no way, this is amazing. So definitely it's way more beneficial to learn at an earlier age than it is later on in life. But how is Spanish taught in the language project?
You know, I don't have a technical term for you this morning, because the way that we teach is just fun. I mean, we just have so much fun with our kids. Our goal is that they fall in love with the second language, that they have an amazing time and that they're learning, and they just don't even know that they're learning. So we teach through music, games. We play lots of games. We do different kinds of activities that just help them touch on different parts of their brain, get them excited. We do workbooks, but it's interactive. So it's, you know, we use a methodology called TPR, which is total physical response. So we're engaging them. We're getting them moving. We're, you know, they're not sitting down staring at the teacher the whole time. They're getting up and jumping up and down and putting their arms up and doing all kinds of fun, different activities that the teachers have them do. Our teachers are generally exhausted by the end of a class because they get very, you know, they get very physically active with the students, and, you know, they're jumping up and down and moving in the language. And so, you know, the best way that somebody is going to learn something is if they're really enjoying it, if they're really engaged in it. And so we took what we knew about the way that children learn, and that's by being completely engrossed in something, you know, physically, mentally. You know, we're touching on their auditory, we're touching on their visual. So in order for them to learn more effectively, we needed to focus on the best way for them to learn, and that is to keep them constantly moving in the language.
It sounds a lot like the way a mother teaches her child the mother tongue.
Absolutely. That is right on, and that's a great observation. It is, you know, so many times we want to teach a child a second language the way that we think that we learn it, you know, through giving them all of the vocabulary and doing flashcards and drill. But really, the second language is best acquired if you just teach it like you taught them English. And that makes sense, but sometimes we just really overthink things. And so if we're teaching them, let's say, ball, just like you taught your children ball, you're going to hold a ball in front of them, and you're going to say ball. You're not going to call it two different things. So, you know, we don't translate it from English to Spanish. We just hand them a ball, and we say ball, and maybe we'll have them bounce the ball, and we'll play a game back and forth with a ball, and we'll read a story about a dog and a ball. We'll talk about what color is it. We'll talk about, is it big? Is it small? You know, those are the ways that we teach, and we use stories. Every different level has a story that is the thread that runs through the lesson. You know, so absolutely, we teach them the way that they learned English. That's how we're teaching them the second language.
Okay, and then we do have Mike Avalos here, a student instructor for the language project. He is studying psychology with a minor in Spanish. So I'm sure he has some type of, like, background in child development. So how has that been, teaching these children, having that background in psychology and then knowing Spanish?
Well, it's actually been extremely interesting, because we do learn how Christine was saying that the children learn how to speak. They pick up language is easier at a really early age. And like you said, being a heritage speaker, it's like super interesting to see kids pick up a language and then say words like better than you at the end of the hour. So it's an awesome opportunity as well, and it's really interesting to actually observe it, not just hear it, or, you know, you got to see it to believe it as well.
Kristen, You spoke a little bit about the research that informs your practice. For instance, the child's developing brain and how it's easier for them to pick up a language. I'm sure there are a lot of benefits to the brain also of learning and the social skills and whole person for learning a second language. What does the research say about that?
So there are some great research articles coming out just about the bilingual brain. They are chock full of amazing information that we're learning, and it's just a really exciting time. The bilingual brain does some really amazing things. It can multitask at a higher level. Bilingual students actually test higher on standardized testing. They do better in math and science. The people that are bilingual actually their brain wards off Alzheimer's because you have to think differently, because your brain has to function at a higher level. It's incredible what the brain does, and so this bilingualism, this learning a second language, goes so much more beyond just actually acquiring a second language. It has amazing benefits for these students, and so what we're seeing is that they're doing better in school, they're focused more in class, and they're going to achieve great things because their brain is actually functioning higher than their other students that are not a part of a language learning program. And I think that is one of the most exciting things for American students, to have these language learnings popping up in the state of Iowa. I can imagine what it's going to do for test scores and for these students as they continue through their education, the great things that they're going to do just outside of being able to communicate with other people in a different language, but the growth that we're going to see in who they are as students is going to be spectacular.
Okay, and do you reach out to other universities and other areas that you have the language program running?
We do. It's been a difficult journey because what we really want to do is we want to go into a community, offer this program, but do more than that. We want education. We want to educate the community on what our stance is, on the bilingual brain, on the benefits of language learning and what that's going to do for their students. But we also want to get the community involved. And so we reach out to local universities to partner with them because Sarah and I were both college students once. It was a while ago. But when you leave college, you have this wealth of information and you have this degree, and it's so hard sometimes to get hired because everybody says, what? You don't have experience. You know, we're looking for somebody with more experience. And so we really want to give these teachers and these Spanish speakers a leg up to give them an experience where they're interning and they're teaching and they're able to say that they worked in the classroom and actually worked in the language once they leave, and so that they have this experience. And so yes, we have had the best luck in Baltimore, Maryland, getting college students to intern and assist with us. We had a summer intern last year in Kansas City who worked with us for summer camp. And then this year we have just seen the most awesome partnership with Iowa State students and the Iowa State University, and just their excitement for the program, and just have felt very welcomed and overwhelmed, you know, with great responses from students excited and interested about working with this program.
Great. And so now, speaking with Mike, how did you find out about the language program, and how did you become interested in it?
Well, like Kristen was saying, because they are grouping up with Iowa State University, it actually came up in one of my Spanish classes where my Spanish professor actually just brought up idea about a job. And it sounded really interesting, especially when you started talking about how it's an opportunity where kids here at Ames Christian School get to learn another language, and we get to be a part of it by teaching it to them. So I was like, oh, you can't go wrong with doing that. It sounds really fun, really interesting. And then getting more information from Kristen as well, I was like, yeah, this has my name all over it. I definitely have to do this, and I definitely have to be a part of it. And I'm definitely enjoying it. Like she was saying, it is TPR. So at the times that we're like raising our hands in the air, like saying manos arriba, we're actually doing it, or saying manos abajo, we're doing it as well. So they catch on really, really fast just by seeing you do the actions. Or like with animals as well. Last class we talked about a león, which is a lion, and a gorilla, which is a gorilla. And they were all like at the end of the class, they were talking to their parents and they're like, hey, we learned how to say, gorilla, or we learned how to say lion. Or there was other kids who catch on super fast and they pronounce it right away, like, the second they hear it, they already know how to say it. Like the word snake, which is serpiente, they were already saying it and they already knew what it was. And with the games that we have with them, they enjoy it and they're really, really good at it.
But that's a really eye-opening experience. I can't imagine being in front of a non-native, like, speaking child and then reciting the language that I grew up on. I think that's amazing. But did you grow up speaking Spanish in your home?
We did, especially when my grandparents came down. We just, like, spoke Spanish and it was, like, our first language. So I became pretty good at it, and I consider myself pretty fluent.
Okay, and what do you have to say about the language program and so far that you've been in it?
Well, I think it's amazing. It's a great opportunity, and I love what they're doing with expanding, like, children languages. And I think it's a big help to the community, especially with the fact that the Spanish language is growing with popularity, and it's definitely a big help, and it's going to be it's help for the children as well.
Awesome. And so I just want to ask Kristen, is there anything else you would like to share with the Ames community about the Language Project?
Absolutely. The Ames community, it doesn't just stop with Ames Christian. We are looking for more schools in the Ames area that want to be a part of this and that want to be a part of growing their students into global learners. We are taking on more schools in the Ames area. We have these great teachers, right, Michael? We have these great teachers that are looking, to teach your students. And so that's definitely an option. We also have summer camps coming up with Ames Christian that will be open to the public this summer. So if they log on to our website, languageprojectkids.com, they can get their child involved in this. There's no Spanish necessary. We will provide all of the things. We're in the Des Moines area as well. We operate within the Des Moines Public School District and multiple schools there. So really, if you're in the Des Moines area or Ames area and those surrounding communities, it's an option for you to have this program at your school. And that's exciting to say because I'm from that area, and I know that sometimes it takes us a while maybe to catch on to things, but there's some forward thinkers out there that are excited about this program and they want to get it in your school. And so we are available and we would love to work with some more students and more schools in that area. And if you're an Iowa State student and you're looking for a program like this, we are definitely looking for more teachers starting in the fall. And we are excited and ready to work with you. And so they can reach out to us as well online.
Great. Well, thank you, Kristen, and thank you, Mike, for being here with KJOI today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us and for getting this conversation started in your area, because that's the important thing, is that we're having these important conversations about education and that we're looking and evaluating what we're doing as educators and making changes, and I think that's important to have programs like yours that are willing to have these conversations mm-hmm. and look into these things and say, why aren't we doing this? And to get excited about programs like this. And so I appreciate you guys having us on.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And I just like to, you did mention that in the Language Project, you guys use a lot of fun and you guys use various types of ways to teach these children Spanish. So I'd like to share just a short clip of a Spanish song called Hola Chicos, or Hi Guys, that you guys use in your music program.
Great.
chicos? Vamos a cantar. ¿Listos? ¡Vale! Hola, hola, chicos, ¿cómo están? Hola, hola, chicos, ¿cómo están? ¿Bien?
¡Bien!
¡Mal!
¡Mal!
¡Súper bien! ¿Qué tal? ¿Bien?
¡Bien!
¡Mal!
¡Mal!
¡Súper bien! ¿Qué tal? Hola, hola, chicos, ¿cómo están? Hola, hola, chicos, ¿cómo están? ¿Tengo sed? ¿Tengo hambre? ¿Tengo sueño? ¿Tengo sed? ¿Tengo hambre? ¿Tengo sueño? Hola, hola, profe, ¿cómo está? ¿Yo?
Sí, ¿cómo está?
¿Bien? Tengo hambre. Tengo sueño. Hola, hola, chicos.
Hello, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. The song you just listened to is titled Hola Chicos, and the language project that the Language Project uses to teach Spanish to elementary students.
I would so love to learn Spanish, and several other languages are on my list, but like we were saying, it's a lot harder when you're this age. Our next segment is actually about a guy who has learned to speak a new language in a way. Ed Fallon, the progressive-minded host of Fallon Forum, has by and large been learning to speak American to conservative-minded red staters.
Last year, he walked across the country talking with anyone who would join him about the perils of climate change. He called it the Great March for Climate Action.
And this month, he began another walk across Iowa, this time along the diagonal path of the proposed pipeline that would bring crude from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota to Illinois. He was in Ames on Wednesday night to tell listeners about what he's learned. Part of that conversation was about strategy, the strategy of how to stop this pipeline. And in a bit, we will be joined by Wally Taylor of the Iowa Sierra Club to give us a picture of where the law stands. But Ed's focus Wednesday night was, as it always is, on people and stories. He began with a recap of last year's adventures.
We were met by unusual weather events in New Mexico and Arizona. I had lunch with a group of Native American women, 70s and 80s, and they had experienced a lot of winters. And they said, this is really different. What we're having now is unprecedented. We don't have the snowfall, the snow cover we had. We have winds like we've never seen before. In eastern Colorado, which gets about 17 or 18 inches of rain a year, we had six nights in a row of heavy thunderstorms. Six nights in a row. Heavy thunderstorms, two nights with heavy hail. Again, that was described as unprecedented. In central Nebraska, we just missed, again, an unprecedented hailstorm. It was 8 miles wide and 100 miles long. And I went back, I said, did I hear that right? I went back after the march was over, I called the National Weather Service, and I verified that, yes, this was 8 miles wide by 100 miles long. And we walked into the storm aftermath. We were fortunately about a couple days behind it, or else our tents would have been shredded. We probably would have been bruised. Crops were leveled. Trees were shredded on the entire side facing the northwest. And we saw the kind of weather that climate scientists are predicting. And so the people we met saw these as well. And when I would ask people, what about climate change? Yeah. There was a town in Nebraska, I remember it was a 100-degree day, very warm. And I was walking across a church parking lot. And a car with a God Votes Pro-Life bumper sticker pulled in. The guy rolls down his window. He says, are you walking against that pipeline? He was referring to the Keystone Pipeline. And I said, yes. And he said, well, thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing that. So everywhere we went, we found people were receptive. There were still people denying climate change out there. But my estimate was about 75% of the people I met got it. You know, there's a tipping point. Scientists talk about the tipping point, that when the climate situation gets so bad, it's going to happen and we're going to be in a world of hurt. I think there's another tipping point as well, and it's on the political level, where we're really close to having enough people raise this as a high enough priority who understand it as a crisis where our elected officials are not going to be able to ignore it any longer. I think we're getting close on that.
That was Ed Fallon in Ames on Wednesday night. He's walking the Bakken Pipeline route, or the proposed Bakken Pipeline route, from southeast Iowa to northwest Iowa. Currently, a three-person board appointed by the governor has this the sole responsibility, or almost sole responsibility, of approving or denying the pipeline official's request. And the pipeline, of course, is something that will affect all Iowans. Ed noted that when there is a spill, it will contaminate the state's waters, the surface water and the groundwater, and Iowa taxpayers will be paying the cost of cleanup because state law only requires the company to hold a $250,000 insurance policy. $250,000, just a tiny fraction of what it would take to clean up a major oil spill. There were a lot of people at the event, and people seemed most interested in knowing what other Iowans are thinking about this. Because Ed is walking the path of the pipeline, he is talking to those landowners who are also being approached by the pipeline company, Dakota Access. As Ed describes in his blog, some people have taken the bait. One couple told him they'd been promised $60,000 for just 2 acres of land.
$60,000, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And the pressure on them is intense. Another couple whose land is in the pipeline's path said they were receiving 6 or 10 phone calls a day from the pipeline representative. Ed told a story of one guy he met just the previous day in Jasper County, southeast of us here in Story County.
Over in Jasper County, a man in his pickup truck pulls over and he's in camo. And he's got a Case IH hat on and he says, "What are you doing anyhow?" Very, very gruff. He went on and gave me a lecture on pipelines. I didn't know there was so much you could know about pipelines. The diameter of the pipe itself, the construction materials, the way they connect with other pipes. And then he looked at me and he says, "You know, I know it. I know a thing or two, and that makes me dangerous, doesn't it?" And I said, "Well, I'm learning a lot on this walk, and by the time I'm done, I'll be just as dangerous as you are." And you know, he was kind of aggressive, but he was also had enough of a sense of humor where he appreciated that. You know, we went on to talk, and I realized we weren't getting anywhere. I mean, mostly what I've talked about on this walk is eminent domain, because, all right, look at the polls. People don't quite see the pipeline as the problem that most of us probably see it is. But they totally understand the importance of not letting people's private property be taken for a non-public purpose. That they get. And so I've been talking about that a lot. But what happened yesterday, I think I'm gonna try to emphasize climate as much as I do eminent domain. So me and this guy were going around about pipelines and trains versus pipes and eminent domain. And I finally said, "You believe in science, right?" Yeah, I believe in science. Well, the scientists are really clear about this. They're pretty much unanimous in that we have a huge problem. And there's no denying the carbon in the atmosphere. There's no denying we have the hottest years on record, one after another. There's no denying that. And we're in for a world of hurt. And I finally saw him kind of like back out of his "I'm the dangerous guy" mode. And he said, "Well, you know, I'm going to be dead before that really becomes a problem." And I thought, ouch, you know? Ouch.
Yeah.
I found his soft spot, just out of the blue. I said, "You know, I don't have grandkids yet, but I probably will, and I'm concerned about their future and about their kids' future." And as he thought about that, he said, "Yeah, I got a 5-year-old grandson." And he, he thought about that some more, and I could tell that it was kind of finally hitting him. We had to move beyond pipeline fittings and pipes versus trains and eminent domain and get to, hey, what about your grandkids? And what about what scientists are telling us? And that actually hit him. And he said his grandkid was 5 years old. I said, "Well, when the kid gets a little bit older, you send him my way and we'll work on saving the world together." Yeah, we parted on good terms.
And that was Ed Fallon. The issue of eminent domain was raised by that last clip. That is when a government takes someone's land away for a public good. The most common instance would be to build a highway. Branstad and many other Republicans are against eminent domain. In this case, it is being expanded to a private entity, a pipeline company that is not serving Iowa as a utility would, but is using Iowa as a pass-through. Now, Iowa's legislators are working on that angle and on several others. In fact, stopping the pipeline is becoming a bipartisan issue in the State House. And we will be talking about the legalities in a moment when we speak with Wally Taylor of the Sierra Club. But what I found, what Ed had to say about the other pipeline, the Keystone pipeline, pretty interesting. This was towards the end of his talk, almost his final pitch. So let's listen now.
Keystone has been an interesting situation. It's both a substantive issue because it would be, again, tapping into that huge reservoir of tar sands oil in Alberta. And it also became a symbolic issue. It became kind of the line in the sand, so to speak, that this is where we've got to stop continuing to exacerbate the climate problem. And I don't know if we won that, but gosh, it feels like we're going to. It feels like we're going to actually win that. Mm-hmm. Bold Nebraska's done an amazing job at assembling a coalition. I mean, the Cowboy Indian Alliance, how great was that? People on horseback in front of the White House, this is great. And they've done just fantastic work. They've got about 10% of the landowners are against it. You know, and here's what's going to happen. I think we're going to, I got this from my meeting with Obama's climate staff back in January. I think he's going to say no to the request for the State Department to approve the crossing of the international boundary. I think he's going to. That's really, really good because we win on Keystone, but the flip side of that is it puts more pressure on this pipeline. Because even though it's only going to North Dakota, you look at a map, it's not far from the Canadian border. And, you know, the Bakken reserves are limited. The Alberta tar sands reserves are vast. And I think it's just a matter of time if this one's built before it taps into that source of oil. And that's really dirty oil. And you get that pipeline built and you get it connected to that. And it's hard enough to stop a bad thing from happening. It's even harder to undo a bad thing once it starts. So I think this becomes even more important in light of what's probably going to happen on Keystone. Our poor neighbors to the north and west, they've already got pipelines. You know, their battles are different than ours. They're trying to, you know, turn the tide back or remove faulty pipelines or stop the increased flow. You know, we're in a unique position of actually, you know, having the opportunity to stop a pipeline from being built. And I think if we do, it'll be significant. For me, coming back from the Great March for Climate Action, it feels like by far the most important thing that I can work on. And, you know, I strongly encourage people to prioritize that as something that we have a national and even international obligation to focus on. And again, maybe if Keystone is decided soon, maybe there'll be some national interest in shifting the focus to the Bakken pipeline because of those very reasons. I don't know, but I think it's that important. I think it's really critical.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Greta Anderson, together with Jasmine Murgia. That was Ed Fallon of the Fallon Forum, and we've got Wally Taylor of the Iowa Sierra Club on the line. Sierra Club, as most people know, is an environmental organization. Wally is the president of the board of directors of the Iowa chapter. He also works as the organization's lawyer, along with serving other clients in his Cedar Rapids law firm. Wally Taylor, glad to have you here.
Thank you.
You, together with many other groups, are making up the No Bakken Coalition, are searching for ways to stop or slow the pipeline's approval. What do you know about the people on the Iowa Utilities Board, the three-person board that evidently has the authority to say yes or no to the pipeline?
Right. The Iowa Utilities Board has the authority under Iowa law to decide whether or not the pipeline company would get a permit to construct the pipeline, and also, if they get that permit, to authorize the pipeline company to use eminent domain to forcibly take easements from landowners in return for whatever payment would be determined is appropriate. The three board members have all been appointed by Governor Branstad over the last few years. The board chair has been Elizabeth Jacobs, who is a former a Republican state representative. She will no longer be the chair if the new person who has just been nominated, Jerry Huser, is confirmed by the Senate. She's a former Democratic state representative, and or state senator, I forget which. And then the other board member is Nick Wagner, who's a former state representative, a Republican.
And do we have any sense of how they stand on the pipeline?
No, no. They have said nothing and have given no indication.
There are several legislative efforts underway in the Iowa State House, I believe, to set the bar a little bit higher. There's talk of requiring an environmental impact statement and limiting the definition of a utility such that it would exclude this pipeline, which doesn't serve the Iowa people, and to increase the amount of insurance the pipeline company would have to carry. Do you have a sense of how likely any of these measures are to pass?
Well, there's also a proposal to limit the eminent domain authority that I was speaking of before. And that probably has a better chance of passing than any of the others. The increase in the financial responsibility, it's not really insurance, it's a bond. I won't get into the difference, but it's financial assurance to cover any cleanup costs, because these pipelines all have spills and they cost millions or even over $1 billion to clean up. There was a Senate bill, which I understand died in the funnel, but there was a House bill that, as far as I know, is still active, that would allow the Utilities Board to set an appropriate bond based on the evidence that they would hear at the public hearing.
Are there any other state-based measures that that the company has to adhere to?
Yes. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources has two different permits that they would have to issue. One is called a floodplain permit to authorize construction in the floodplains of the various rivers that this pipeline would cross. There are, I think, 11 rivers from the Big Sioux all the way to the Mississippi that it would cross, and they have to get a floodplain permit for all of those crossings. And also there's what's called a sovereign lands permit that they would have to get to cross the Big Sioux River, the Des Moines River, and the Mississippi River. And also there's a wildlife refuge up in northwest Iowa that is a sovereign land. They would have to make sure that they're not impacting any natural features, any threatened or endangered species, or any archaeological sites.
And so all of this is on state level. What kinds of hoops in terms of federal law does the pipeline company have to jump through?
The Corps of Engineers has to issue what's called a 404 permit for any impact to what they call waters of the United States, which would be rivers, streams, wetlands, lakes, those kinds of things. And the Corps has what they call a nationwide permit, which would sort of automatically permit the project, although it's not necessarily automatic. They would still have to do a lot of studies and make sure that there are no impacts, but there would not be an environmental impact statement or anything like that if there were a single permit. That's in the process right now, and at this point, the Corps of Engineers has told the pipeline company that their application was insufficient. They hadn't done enough studies. They hadn't presented enough information, and so the Corps has told the pipeline company to go back and do a better job.
And you direct the legal team for the Coalition Against the Pipeline. What do you think is the Coalition's best hope for this?
You know, in environmental law, you never know what's going to work. You just try everything. But I think we have a decent shot at getting the IUB to deny the construction permit. There is no benefit to Iowa as far as the service from this pipeline. The only benefits that the pipeline company can argue are some temporary jobs and perhaps some tax revenue. But economists have critiqued that assessment and said that the pipeline company's estimates of how much the economic impact would be is flawed and grossly overstated.
Yeah, the I understand that some labor groups, however, have bought the line that jobs are available and they're worth the risks.
Right, and that's unfortunate. And I certainly sympathize with the workers. I mean, you know, they need the jobs, they need to feed their families, but they are being seriously misled here by the pipeline company. And, you know, there would be much more employment, much better jobs in renewable energy and 21st century solutions to our energy needs instead of this kind of a project. And it's only temporary, and they've promised like 2 years of employment, but from what the pipeline company has been saying as to the number of miles of pipeline they would lay per day, 15 miles per day, that's only a little over a month for the 343 miles of the pipeline in Iowa. So I think they're really misstating, to put it mildly, the employment opportunities here.
Okay, well, we have to move on, but thank you so much, Wally, for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
That was Wally Taylor, chair of the board of directors of Iowa Sierra Club, also the group's legal counsel, talking about the Bakken pipeline.
And to end the show, Vivica Dillard, producer and host of The Hotspot on KJOI FM, is here to talk about March Madness. We had hoped that this discussion would include the Cyclones, but unfortunately that's not the case. But last weekend, Cyclone fans experienced an incredible high after their sixth in a row come-from-behind victory to win the Big 12 championship.
This week it was not so much, as yesterday the Cyclones lost their first game in the NCAA tournament by 1 point to a much lower ranked team, the Blazers of the University of Alabama at Birmingham. The Blazers. Vivica, what the heck happened to the Clones yesterday?
I don't know. They lost it. They played a really bad game. To be honest with you, UAB played bad, but Iowa State, like, matched them and played, like, even worse. But,
what were the major flaws? Turnovers?
Yeah, they got out-rebounded, I believe it was 50 to 30 or somewhere around there. They got out-rebounded by at least 20 rebounds.
And maybe, you know, they were ahead at the half. Maybe that sort of jinxed them, seeing as how they're coming from behind.
Yeah, yeah. And, Coach Hoiberg, he said that they were up by 11 at the half, and he said, "Yeah, maybe we should have been down by 11. Maybe we would have won." But yeah, it was a tough game to watch. Mm-hmm. It was yesterday was a tough day to watch basketball in general. So
why do you say that?
Because everybody from the moment Iowa State, because that was the first game that started off March Madness. From the moment they lost, Everyone's bracket just went downhill because they lost, Baylor lost, someone else. It was another quality. Actually, Notre Dame almost lost, but it was just a terrible day for brackets. So,
okay, so what is there left for the Cyclone fans to root for now?
The women. The women tip off today at 11 against Dayton. So I'm keeping hope alive on that one. The women, the women team, it's a good group, and Dayton, they're big, but we have the leading rebounder in the Big 12, and she's only about 5'9", 5'10", so I got faith that that they'll come through. They'll make it to the round of 32 at least. So.
And then there's the University of Northern Iowa.
UNI, yes. They take on the Pokies, whatever they call them, of Wyoming. So, it's funny because I have a cousin that went to University of Wyoming. He was a starting point guard and everything, like holds records and everything. So we've been going back and forth all week about this, but UNI is definitely going to win this game. They're good. Are you ladies watching any of it? Have you been?
No.
Come on.
But, you know, it's the cable companies. We got to subscribe to cable if we want to watch, and that's just, that's just not my style. So.
That means you got to move. Now you got to move. You got to go somewhere that just offers free cable now. No, it's a good day. It's still a good day to be a Cyclone. But yesterday, when I tell you, I think I know what depression feels like now. 'Cause yesterday was awful. Yesterday was awful, man.
So tell us more about the women. They're going to be playing Dayton. Where is this tournament held?
They play in Lexington, Kentucky. So it's an hour away from where the men played in Louisville. They are a 7 seed, and Dayton is a 10 seed. And hopefully Dayton, they're small. Their shortest player is about 5'9". So, yeah, they're tall and long and big. But so hopefully they don't come up with an upset. Usually, last year, Iowa State women lost to Florida State in the first round, but it was here, and they played at home because Hilton, they usually host the second round here. But now they're in Kentucky. So hopefully Cyclone Nation will travel. They didn't leave Kentucky too soon yesterday.
Right.
Yeah.
And if they do win, will they progress here to Ames? Will this be the second round site for them?
No. If they win today, they will play the winner of the following game, still in Kentucky. And then they just continue to move on. I believe they go on to Albany, New York. That's where they go.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll cross our fingers.
Yes.
What else should we know about March Madness?
Don't bet money on your brackets. Never bet money. Because you will be broke and disappointed. So,
how does your bracket look like, I guess?
Oh, it
now
looks,
after yesterday's upsets.
You know what? I do 3 brackets every year. I do 1 wishful thinking bracket. So that's the bracket Iowa State, they win it all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one is ruined. And I have 2. They're still at 1. I'm at 72%. And my 3rd one, I'm at 92%. So
that's not bad.
So far, so good. So far, so good.
I wonder how President Obama's bracket is. He had Iowa State in the Final 8.
Yeah, so did I. His bracket looks about the same as everybody else's in the country. So.
That's a good sign, I guess.
Yeah.
He's in tune with the public.
Yeah. There we go.
All right. Well, thank you, Vivica, for giving us a rundown of March Madness.
Oh, anytime. Anytime.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have live music for March 20th through the 26th. On Friday, March 20th, Farm Rock will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler. Matt Woods will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. Saturday, March 21st, The Fight Inside will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. On Thursday, March 26th, Super Tree will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
Hey, this is Jasmine Gia and Greta Anderson for Local Talk on KHOY-FM Community Radio. Today we learned about a new program in Ames, the Language Project. The Language Project is a program for elementary students all over the nation where they learn Spanish at a very young age and continue to do so throughout the years in school. We spoke to Kristen Farrell, director of the Language Project, and Mike Avalos, ISU student instructor for the Learning Project.
Then we focused on the Bakken Pipeline. Ed Fallon was in town on Wednesday night walking the proposed route of the pipeline across Iowa. We heard clips from him, and we talked live to Wally Taylor, the chair of the Iowa Sierra Club and the legal counsel for that organization.
And we had KHOY producer of The Hotspot, Vivica Dillard, come in and speak about March Madness. You can listen to music ranging from Beyonce to 90s rhythm and blues on The Hotspot every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. This was Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. You can listen to the show and many others on khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. We want to thank our guests for today's show and to you, the listener. Thank you.